When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Hey everybody, it's me, Josh, and I think that Will Smith put it best when he said, "Summer, summer, summertime, summertime." And in that spirit, I've chosen, for this week's Select, a very summary episode indeed, our 2018 comprehensive overview of everything to do with ketchup. I hope you enjoy it, and I sure hope you enjoy your summer time.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's guest producer Noel. This is Stuff You Should Know.
I hate ketchup.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you like tomato sauce?
Like pasta?
Sure.
Love it.
Do you like tomato soup?
Don't love it. I'll choke it down though.
So I'm starting to see a spectrum emerge here.
Oh yeah. I don't go for raw tomato much.
Well,
love cooked pasta sauce.
Yeah.
But I'm a mayonnaise guy at heart. So if we're talking condiments.
You know, one thing about the Dorito effect, that it kind of ruined me a little bit on food. Like, I'll be like, oh, this is a good tomato. And then some part of my brain's like, yeah, well, it's not a 1940s tomato. You don't know what a good tomato is.
Oh. What do you mean? You like, know? Like a Jersey tomato versus a, you know, just some other stupid tomato?
No, supposedly, like, just the agricultural production in the U.S. is so homogenized now that, like, we've lost all these great heirloom varieties of...
Gotcha.
Especially tomato, and the stuff that most people get that are tomatoes are just they're no good compared to how they used to be.
Oh, you hit up a farmer's market.
Sure. But even still.
Grow that junk yourself.
Right, there you go. Or build a time machine, take the Wayback Machine and get some tomatoes.
We got that at our disposal. What's your problem?
I'm just cheap. I don't like to spend it on the gas.
Oh, the gas. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's funny, Chuck, that you like mayonnaise, because did you know before this, I should say, that the number one condiment for sales-wise in the United States is mayonnaise?
I did not know that. And when I saw that, that surprised me, A, and it surprised me, B, that it was that much more than ketchup. I figured ketchup would be far and away the winner, because I always feel like the ultimate weirdo for not liking ketchup.
So what is it about ketchup you don't like?
The taste.
Oh, okay. That's a pretty good reason not to like it.
I'm not wild about vinegar-based things.
Oh, yeah.
I do like balsamic vinegar, but a lot of the other vinegars I'm not crazy about. That's one of the reasons I don't like pickled things.
Right.
But so vinegar-based things, it's really sweet, and I don't love sweet condiments.
Mm-hmm.
Have
you ever had curry ketchup?
No, I don't eat ketchup.
Oh, I see.
And then the when I was a kid, I can't lie, it probably grossed me out a little bit because I
the you caught your mom bathing in it.
Yeah, that was it. Oh my god. Oh, that's disturbing. the blood thing, you know, I probably thought, you know, it grossed me out because we would use it as blood for play acting and things.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, just not into it.
Those are some solid reasons to not like ketchup.
Plus, I don't know if people would probably argue that ketchup and mayonnaise are great together. But once you're on the mayo train, to mix up another condiment with it just doesn't make sense to me.
I don't discriminate. I like most, if not all, condiments.
So like ketchup, mayo, and mustard on a burger is good to you?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. It's not like I can't eat it without it. Like I've actually found I can eat burgers without ketchup now.
Uh-huh.
So I'm a grown up. But I do like a little bit of ketchup on there, a little bit of mustard, and then yes, definitely mayo.
Well, Emily loves ketchup so much that she calls French fries a ketchup delivery system.
Yeah, it makes sense. They're a vehicle for it.
Yeah.
Tell her to try curry ketchup. It'll knock her socks off.
I totally will. I like curry.
So, yeah, but you don't like ketchup, so you wouldn't like this. But okay. If she likes ketchup, even if she doesn't like curry, she may still like curry ketchup.
No, she likes curry.
Oh, well, then she's going to love curry ketchup.
Yeah.
So mayonnaise is the number one condiment in the United States. It's a big surprise, which must mean ketchup is number two.
Yeah, which, oh, by the way, I'd mentioned how much more. I think it was about $2 billion to $800 million.
Right.
Which is, that's a, more than double. That kind of surprised me.
Yeah, it is very surprising. What's even more surprising is I was being facetious because ketchup isn't even the number two condiment in the United States.
Oh,
salsa
yeah.
is.
That's right. Salsa had a big surge in the like 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm. It's because people like to say salsa.
Another Seinfeld reference.
Ketchup is number three, right?
Yeah,
at least
so.
It's got mustard beet for Pete's sake. What is this, the EU, you know?
Yet, 97% of American households have a bottle of ketchup in their, well, it says kitchens, but we'll get to the fridge, non-fridge thing later.
Sure. So, yes, everybody loves ketchup, especially in America, because it's obviously an American invention. Everybody knows that John Wayne's grandfather invented ketchup while he was sailing his Ford truck down the Mississippi River. And one day, a magical bottle of Budweiser came and whispered the recipe in his ear. And they commemorated the event by shooting off fireworks.
I love it.
And that's how ketchup was born. Everybody knows it,
and
right?
And fireworks.
Right.
Pretty neat. No, that's not true. Although, I take a little bit of issue with this. Because ketchup was first created in Asia, in China, in about 544 CE.
I should say, I saw they think maybe the Chinese got it from the Vietnamese.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Okay.
But as you will see, these recipes that were originally for preserving fish, it's, A, they didn't have tomatoes at all. That came in America much later.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so not like ketchup. To me, it's you can't even trace it back and say, like, yep, that's ketchup. Like, but what's the point in even linking these things?
Because you can link them. Like, that's the fascinating thing to me about it. It's like American ketchup, what we think of as ketchup here in the States, like Heinz 57 stuff, right? It's a species that evolved, not Heinz 57 sauce, but Heinz ketchup.
Oh, okay.
What everybody thinks of as ketchup, right? It's a species that evolved from an ancestor it can directly trace its lineage right back to this ketchup in Asia. So much so that the word ketchup is an anglicization of either a Malay word that was borrowed from the Cantonese or a Hokkien South China Fujian province word. Either way, it was something like ketsup. And it meant a fermented fish paste. It's like when you go to the store today and you buy fish sauce.
Yeah, I love it.
That's the progenitor of ketchup. That's where ketchup came from.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that makes sense. It's just, to me, it's changed so much. It's almost like you should just draw a line and I guess that line would be pre-tomato and post-tomato.
I think that's pretty fair to say, yeah, pre-tomato and post-tomato. You can definitely draw a line because if you look at Heinz ketchup bottles, it says clearly tomato ketchup.
Yeah.
And there's this really great, I think it was a Fastco design article by a guy named John Brownlee who points out, like, why would they even bother putting tomato on the label? Of course it's tomato ketchup, you idiot. And the reason is because that's a throwback to a time when ketchup didn't have tomato in it. It had things like sardines and anchovies.
Yeah.
Well, not sardines, but anchovies.
So I bet there were sardines. There were, you name it, and it was probably in ketchup at some point.
Right.
So Asia, maybe Southeast Asia, maybe China. Mm-hmm. The Brits encountered this on some of their wild trips abroad.
Right.
And as many things, brought it home, said, we love this stuff. Let's try and replicate it. And then in 1732 was one of the first published recipes in the UK, ketchup in paste by Richard Bradley.
Right. Bradley.
Yeah, Ricky Bradley. And he did reference the the East Indies as its origin.
Yeah.
But this is still pre-tomato.
Sure, yeah. It was a very pretty faithful recreation of the fish sauce that they found, the catsup. I'm pretty sure that's how you say it. I'd be very interested to know how to pronounce it correctly. But it was a faithful recreation of it, which was basically like preserved fish in a sort of brine with some spices thrown in, maybe a little mace, some salt, some pepper, maybe something like lemon peel, and then
that sounds good to me.
Yeah. Well, if you like fish sauce, you would love the original ketchup because it's basically the same thing, right?
Well, I do like fish sauce, but it's you got to use it liberally, and it's only for certain things.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
You don't want to just like go throwing fish sauce on everything.
I don't know, man. If you love fish sauce, it's like with ketchup. People will put ketchup on just about anything.
Well, we'll get to that.
So at first, the Brits are like, blimey, this is really good stuff.
Boy, that's a good accent.
But I'm not that big on anchovies. What else can we replace it with? So they started making their own kind of offshoots of ketchup where they replaced the anchovies with other stuff.
Yeah, I mean, mushrooms, mm-hmm. walnuts, mm-hmm. What else? Elderberry?
Yeah.
Oysters?
Yeah, and what they were going for was that umami flavor. They didn't know it at the time because umami wasn't discovered until, the 60s, I think? I think it was the 60s.
We did a show on that.
Yeah, everybody kind of knew that it was a thing, but no one had actually, like, sussed it out or named it.
Right.
But that's what they were going for was that savory, meaty flavor that you would get from something like fermented anchovies, and they were trying to recreate it, and they did. I mean, like, apparently mushroom ketchup tasted a lot like Worcestershire sauce.
Yeah.
And then walnut ketchup. Apparently Jane Austen was a big fan of that. And if you're sitting there thinking of putting this on like your hot dog, the hot dogs weren't invented yet. That's not what people were using it for. They were using it as like a base for stews.
Yeah.
Or like meat pies, things like that. It was like a sauce. It was a base. It was something that you were taking bland food and making it savory with this bottle of this stuff that was made from fermented something or other.
Well, and they would baste it on, they would use it like, we kind of use barbecue sauce. They would baste it on things while they're cooking.
Sure.
Which I just can't imagine that. Like basting tomato base. Well, this is before it was tomato, I guess, but.
Right. This is when it was mushroom based.
Yeah, but you mentioned umami and your buddy Malcolm Gladwell wrote an article for The New Yorker and kind of throwing out the question, like, why are there so many kinds of mustard, yet ketchup is kind of ketchup? And his answer was because it satisfies all the fundamental tastes, all five,
right.
Sweet, salty, sour, bitter, and umami.
Another answer is that there actually are a ton of different kinds of ketchup.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't get to mention
just
that.
Just as many as there are mustard, it seems.
So America is who first, because tomatoes are native to North America, and this is where people first started using tomato as the base.
Yeah, but, Chuck, it took a really long, circuitous route to get to that point, and the reason why is, in America, people were making ketchup, but they were still doing things like using walnuts and using mushrooms and oysters as the base of it, right?
Yeah.
They still weren't using tomatoes, even though tomatoes were everywhere. And that was because the Europeans and American colonists or European colonists considered tomatoes poisonous.
Yeah.
So they didn't eat tomatoes.
Dummies.
I think they used them as like ornamental plants or something like that.
Oy.
Finally, some people started to like try them and tried to convince other people. And then they went through a little period where they were considered medicine. And then finally, somebody started adding them to ketchup. And the first tomato ketchup recipe appears in an American cookbook depending on who you ask, either in 1812 or 1801.
Yeah, the 1812 one, that's the one I found was 1812, but it still didn't really, really take off until post-Civil War.
Right.
And this is 1871 when a man named Henry Hines, he got together with a doctor, isn't that right?
Yes, that guy, Dr. Wiley, I can't remember his first name, but he shows up in our FDA, does the FDA Protect Americans. Remember that guy who put together that group of people who would like eat preservatives until they were poisoned to find out whether something was poisonous or not?
Yes.
That was the guy who set up that squad.
Yeah, Dr. Harvey Washington Wiley.
Yeah.
So his whole deal was for a while there, ketchup had some really nasty chemicals in it. Mm-hmm. Some of them had, and these were all preservatives, some of it was coal tar that gave it the red color, and then sodium benzoate, and that helped to retard spoilage. So it was really nasty stuff, and he kind of first championed that this stuff is harmful to your health. So he got together with Henry J. Hines, who was producing ketchup in 1876, and they were like, you know what? If you use really good, because at the time the ketchup they were making was from like scraps of tomatoes that were kind of like junk tomatoes.
Right.
And they said, you know what? If you use good ripe red tomatoes as your base, it has a natural preservative in it called pectin. And it really, you know, we got to ramp up the vinegar. Because that'll help out with the spoilage, and all of a sudden we don't need to use chemicals anymore.
Right, which was a huge breakthrough. And the reason why there are so many preservatives in ketchup was because tomatoes have a pretty short growing season. It's like mid-August to mid-October. And so the only time during the year you could make fresh ketchup was those 2 months. And you couldn't make a year's worth of ketchup. Like by this time, people were buying millions of bottles of ketchup in America alone a year, right? So you couldn't make all that in 2 months. So you had to preserve the pulp. But they took terrible standards and practices to preserving. So when you opened up that tub of pulp, you know, come July.
Good band name.
To make some new ketchup, it was totally spoiled, ridden with bacteria. It was very dangerous stuff to begin with. And that was the basis that they used to start with.
Yeah.
So it was really bad stuff. And when Hines created this preservative-free version of ketchup, it was a huge, huge breakthrough.
Yeah. And way back in 1890, he even created that iconic octagonal ketchup bottle.
Yeah.
That you cannot buy in stores anymore, as far as I know, but you can still get in restaurants.
You can take them from restaurants. Just leave an extra good tip.
All right, so let's take a break here, and we'll get back and talk about this foul condiment right after this.
When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and free.
That's right. On LinkedIn, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Hire professionals like professionals on LinkedIn.
Yeah. And LinkedIn knows that small businesses are wearing so many hats that they don't have the time or resources to hire. So LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive. No wonder 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring.
So post your job for free at linkedin.com/SYSK23. That's linkedin.com/SYSK23 to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so today, ketchup is basically tomatoes, salt, vinegar, onion powder,
more,
some spice, some kind of sweetener, either a lot of sugar or a lot of corn syrup or high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah, I think high fructose corn syrup is the standard, and I think it was Hunt's that first came out with a brand that didn't have high fructose corn syrup, and they touted it all up and down the avenue.
And Heinz is far and away, like, since I don't do ketchup, I made the bad mistake of buying the wrong ketchup one time for Emily.
What kind did you get her?
I think it was Hunt's.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, she was like, no. It's like, don't bring any Hunt's, and God forbid, any Del Monte ketchup in this household.
Yeah.
It's Heinz.
Yeah.
In my house. And it is far and away the leader. I think they have, what, like 60% of the market share?
That's in the U.S. They have about 30% of the global market. So, like,
not bad.
Heinz is synonymous, literally, with ketchup around the world.
That's correct.
Everybody knows Heinz ketchup, right?
We should have gotten them as a sponsor.
Yeah, we should have.
But then we wouldn't have been able to do a show about ketchup.
We're giving this away for
free. Because we have values.
Yeah, we do. We really do, Chuck.
Yeah.
Congratulations to you on your values.
And you as well.
So ketchup's much more standardized. Depending on who you ask, it's either incredibly toxic or actually has some health benefits. Could be both,
yeah.
Right? There's a... I think I already said that. There was a period where tomatoes were seen as medicine back in the day.
Yeah, they had tomato pills.
Yeah, they had tomato pills. And actually, they had ketchup pills, too. There was a doctor in Ohio who stole the ideas of another doctor in Michigan and went to a guy who was selling patent medicine and said, hey, man, tomatoes are super healthy. And so by extension, ketchup should be super healthy. And I believe that they do things like treat indigestion by removing bile from the body.
Yeah, you got some diarrhea, eat some ketchup.
Got jaundice, ketchup pills, right?
How about rheumatism or headaches?
Well, so this is where it starts to get a little wacky, right?
Yeah.
They started selling Dr. Mills compound extract of tomato, and they were successful. This was back in 1835, and they were successful, and a bunch of imitators came on the market, and all of a sudden, it was not so great any longer.
Well, no, because a lot of them didn't even have tomatoes in them. They were fraudulent ketchup pills.
Or they were laxatives.
Acting as laxatives, and so... That caused the great tomato pill market crash of 1840.
But today, we're much smarter, and rather than ketchup pills, we take tomato pills, also known as lycopene supplements.
Yeah, because lycopene that's the good stuff that you're looking for that has been shown to help cancer patients. Specifically, I think the one that they've actually proven is prostate cancer, right?
So they haven't proven it, but that one's shown, there's been the most like positive studies, but even still, the jury's still out on that one.
Oh, okay.
But yes, prostate cancer is the one that they roundly point to and say, lycopene really helps with this. And at least some studies have shown that lycopene somehow disrupts communication between cancer cells and it retards the growth of blood vessels to the cancer cells, so they can't grow as well. And apparently the body produces lycopene naturally, but also readily absorbs and uses it too. And one of the great sources of lycopene is tomatoes.
Right.
And lycopene gives tomatoes, among other things, its red color. But the amazing thing about it is if you eat a raw tomato right now, you're not going to absorb as much lycopene as if you ate some ketchup right now.
Yeah, it's got to be cooked.
Yeah, it releases the lycopene, or it makes it more readily available to the human body, we should say.
Yeah, but they also say even if it does help, it's like you know, a little ketchup on a hamburger is not nearly enough to really do you a lot of good.
No, it's something like 2.5 milligrams of lycopene in a tablespoon of ketchup. You say, well, I'll just eat a bunch of ketchup. The problem is if you eat, say, like a half a cup, about 7 tablespoons of ketchup, which you just have to be a weirdo anyway to do that.
Right.
You're getting about 3/4 of your daily sodium intake and 4 teaspoons of added sugar as well.
Yeah.
Where you're just better off like eating some tomato sauce instead.
Yeah.
But the point is if lycopene helps humans, which the jury's still out, but it looks like it's possible, then ketchup actually can help humans by giving a little extra lycopene.
That's right.
Just put some ketchup in on your tomato sauce.
Yeah, and all these things can add up over time.
Sure.
So ketchup was selling well in America post-Civil War. You got the tomato going now. Everyone loves it. But there was a problem early on with ketchup that took a long, long time to fully solve. And I bet you they're still sort of working on it, is that ketchup, anyone who grew up in the 70s and 80s and loved ketchup at a diner would have a hard time getting the ketchup out of that glass bottle.
There were
all kinds of tricks. I remember one of them was that if you tapped on the 57 on the label, mm-hmm. was that it?
Yep.
That it would come out better.
Yeah, that's true.
Then you had the jackass who would just smash the bottom of it until ketchup would shoot out all across the table.
That works, but not well.
Or the more sheepish person at the diner might stick a butter knife in there.
And be like, die, ketchup.
And coax it out. And the reason all this is happening is because ketchup, and this is a good little dinner party factoid, is a non-Newtonian fluid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you ever change your oil or even pour water out of a cup, you will notice that it all pours out at the same rate. It has a single viscosity. It's a Newtonian fluid.
Right. Newton's like, those are great.
Ketchup, it can start to come out very slowly, and then all of a sudden it starts picking up steam and coming out of that bottle, and that's when you know you're really cooking. That's has different external forces acting upon it to either increase or decrease that viscosity.
Right. So it has multiple viscosities, which makes it a non-Newtonian fluid, right?
Yep.
And when you put force on it, specifically shear force, it changes the viscosity. It actually decreases the viscosity of the ketchup, which increases the flow rate, which means it comes out of the bottle faster. And one of the ways that you can introduce shear force, S-H-E-A-R, is to tap on the bottle.
Yes.
That concussive force looses or changes the viscosity and the ketchup flows more quickly. So it actually is true.
So there was something to that then.
Yeah, that tapping on that embossed 57, the one that was like embossed on the bottle.
Yeah.
That's the perfect spot to tap, because if you hit it with the heel of your palm onto the rear of the bottle, if you hit it
normally, spank it on the bottom.
If you do that lightly, all you're doing is reducing the viscosity of the ketchup right in the rear.
Yeah.
But the stuff toward the neck of the bottle that you're trying to get out, it remains highly viscous, right? If you tap toward the neck of the bottle, you're going to reduce the viscosity of the ketchup that's up there in front, and it'll start to slide out. If you hit that thing on the bottom hard enough that you change the viscosity of all the ketchup inside, yeah, it's going to come shooting out, and you're going to look like an idiot. All your friends are going to laugh at you, and you'll die alone.
That's right. So they had a problem with this, and they thought, in 1968, what about ketchup packets? This kind of solves that problem because you can squeeze it out. And they said, yeah, that's kind of neat. It might do well for restaurants, but no one's going to have a Ziploc bag full of ketchup packets in their fridge unless you're my mom, and they're from like 8 different fast food restaurants.
Sure.
God bless her. So that, you know, those are still around, but it took till 1983 to come up with the plastic squeeze bottle, which still didn't fully work, because as this our own article points out, they made funny farting noises, which I guess is unseemly at a dinner table.
Sure.
And then that what the industry insiders call serum, that thin, watery, kind of gross stuff that nobody wants on their hamburger or hot dog.
Ketchup juice.
Yeah, toward the end, that serum comes out, and nobody wants that. So those squeeze bottles weren't the ultimate solve.
Yeah, it's basically just separated water separated from the ketchup solids.
Yeah.
And there are actual academic papers on this conundrum, this problem with serum separation and ketchup.
Oh, I'm sure.
People trying to figure out how to get around it. I think they've hybridized a new kind of tomato that allows for less serum separation once processed into ketchup even.
Well, couldn't you just shake it up? I'm a novice, but...
Yeah, you do. You shake it up. And it typically works. But in, I think, 2002, Heinz and Hunt's, and apparently Hunt's was working on it first, and Heinz got wind of it and started their own project. But almost simultaneously, Heinz and Hunt's released a new type of squeeze bottle that you could stand upside down, so the ketchup stayed toward the bottom, right?
Uh-huh.
And it was actually designed to catch the ketchup juice, the serum, and remix it back into the ketchup solids as it flowed out.
That's right. A dude named Paul Brown is the hero to many because he created the silicone valve, and it wasn't just for ketchup. In fact, I don't even know if it was originally...
It was for shampoos, I think, that he was trying to come up with.
Well, that makes sense. But he's a hero to ketchup lovers.
Yeah.
So these liquid valves, they had right angle slits cut into the valve. So when you squeeze the bottle, it flows out nice and neat. And then they close back up when you stop squeezing, which seals it back up inside the bottle.
And then it's...
Revolutionary.
It's a dome that has the slits cut into the side of it. And then around the dome, it's a place where the serum collects... And then as the ketchup is moving out, it's supposed to mix back in together.
It's so funny how much science has gone into this.
Right, just to get the ketchup right. And it still isn't perfect. Like anybody who uses this bottle knows that you still get ketchup juice when you first squirt it unless you shake it first.
Yeah.
And even then, you're still going to get a little serum. It's just a fact of life, you know?
Yeah.
You don't want to do it on a bad day because that can be the thing, that straw that just breaks the camel's back, you know? Where you just... Yeah. Suddenly you're sobbing, standing in your kitchen, holding that squeeze bottle of ketchup.
See, that's why you go for mayonnaise, because although it is a non-Newtonian fluid, there's no mayonnaise serum.
Did you finish your Kewpie mayonnaise yet?
I did, and I need to go to the little mart near my house to see if they have more.
Any halfway decent Asian market will have it.
I'm sure they do. I mean, you can buy matcha powder and eel, so I'm sure you can buy this stuff.
They will have Kewpie mayonnaise.
All right, so 2002 is when that new valve was introduced by Heinz and Hunt. It doesn't mention poor Del Monte. I wouldn't feel too bad for them, though. They're still selling a lot of ketchup.
Yeah, they're still making that money.
You know? I want to hear from people, though, that are like, no, I'm a Del Monte man, through and through.
Oh, there's somebody out there. We want to hear from the legit ones, not hipster ones.
Yeah, I like Malort and Del Monte ketchup.
Right.
And PBR.
I don't wear shirts.
So 2002 was when that was invented, implemented. And then there was that still final problem, apparently, with ketchup, where you get to the bottom of the bottle, of those squeeze bottles, and you can't get it all out. And that was solved with a little bit of technology, courtesy of MIT, called Liquiglide.
Yeah, I don't know if they've implemented this yet. It sounds like adding something that is really unnecessary that could conceivably be toxic to humans.
Oh, is it not in there yet?
I don't believe so. From the How Stuff Works article, makes it sound like they've invented it and they're planning on it, but they haven't put it in yet.
Yeah, so the thing with Liquiglide, I looked up what that was all about, and I think the deal is it essentially sort of is a coating on the inside of the bottle that makes the inside of the bottle pre-wet in a way.
Okay.
Slippery.
What was it that Clark Griswold came up with in Christmas Vacation?
Oh, it was like a silicone that he ended up putting on the...
That's Liquiglide.
Yeah, basically. I thought if there was going to be any vacation reference in this, it would be real tomato ketchup, Eddie.
What was that one in?
That was when he spooned, he spooned the ketchup on the sandwich, and it was kind of this chunky mess. And real tomato ketchup, and he went, nothing but the best, Clark.
Nice.
So Liquiglide, by all accounts, is, they say, food safe, but I always wonder about this stuff. Like, sure. I don't trust the FDA, so, or I'm not going to say that. I don't fully trust the FDA in all cases. Mm-hmm. So I just can't imagine that we haven't been poisoning ourselves all along with food containers, you know?
Don't you wonder, like, if there's going to be that revelation that, like, it's a cookbook moment or Soylent Green is human, just that moment where we come to realize that this beep, whatever thing it is, this is the thing that's been giving everyone who's ever had cancer since it's been invented cancer. You know, like, this is the smoking gun. Don't you just think that there's got to be? I assume it's just plastics in general.
I think it's a mix of a lot of things of modern manufacturing. So, and farming and pesticides and, I mean, you name it. So depressing. Should we take a break?
Maybe we can pull this one back from the brink.
All right, we're going to get to ketchup versus catsup, which I know everyone wants to know about.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Chuck, we shouldn't put it off any longer.
All right, hit me.
So ketchup, K-E-T-C-H-U-P.
Yep.
Versus catsup, C-A-T-S-U-P.
Weird.
The How Stuff Works article, I didn't see this anywhere else, is that they're pronounced the same.
Correct.
Have you ever heard that? So you've seen people say ketchup, and you knew that in their mind they saw the word catsup.
Yes.
All right. I did not realize that. I
so you was said ketchup? Catsup?
Yes, but I always say ketchup. I say catsup like mockingly.
Oh, okay.
But I that's how I pronounce it, you know?
Yeah.
But apparently, they're both just bastardizations, anglicizations of whatever word ketchup originally comes from, either that Fujian word or the Malaysian word. For again, that anchovy fermented paste.
And so I think Heinz used ketchup starting pretty early on, correct?
Yes. So that's an interesting story. And you just basically told the whole thing.
Oh, was that it?
Well, yeah, they came, Heinz, even though they're like the global leader in ketchup, they came to the market pretty late, like 30 years after ketchup was sold and mass produced in the U.S.
Yeah.
Heinz came along finally, and they wanted to distinguish themselves their competitors. So they used ketchup, but ketchup wasn't a new word. It was the original word. If you look back at like some of those 18th century recipes, it's ketchup, K-E-T-C-H-U-P.
Right.
And then apparently sometime in the 18th century, people started calling it catsup. And so that was the preferred term or spelling.
Okay.
And then Heinz distinguished themselves and brought ketchup spelling, the popularized spelling with a K back.
And because they got market share, that became the norm.
Exactly. And then, so it was Del Monte who was the big outlier for years and years and years.
Yeah, 1988 was when they finally said, all right, no more catsup.
Yep.
We're going with ketchup.
Yep, and they did. They gave in.
What about this other thing that I know a lot of people have argued over for generations is fridge or no fridge?
So, I mean, it's got a lot of vinegar in it. It's supposedly, as far as Heinz is concerned, they say it's shelf stable,
yes,
meaning that even after you open it, it's got enough stuff in it that it's going to stay fine.
Right.
But outside of the fridge, but they still recommend keeping it in the fridge.
Yeah, they say, and this is a direct quote from Heinz, whoever the latest Heinz heir is.
I think it's John Kerry.
Oh, right. Wasn't his wife the Heinz heir?
Yeah, Teresa Heinz.
Right.
Yeah.
So John Kerry says, because of its natural acidity, it's shelf stable. However, its stability after opening can be affected by storage conditions, so we recommend, like any processed food, it be refrigerated after opening. So in other words, if you live in Yuma, Arizona, you might not want to keep your ketchup in, and you don't have air conditioning, you might not want to keep your ketchup on the table.
But you probably could if you really wanted to.
But if you lived in Southern California, where the breeze is always cool and the air is always clean, then
yes,
then you might want to, you know, you could put it on your table and you'd probably be fine.
Yeah, and again, it's got like a number of different preservatives in it. It's got vinegar in it. It has sugar, which is a preservative. It has pectin, naturally found in tomatoes. It's a preservative. It's probably going to be fine, but...
But keep it in the fridge. I mean, why not?
Yeah. Well, don't listen to us.
Unless you have like... If you don't have enough room in your fridge for the bottle of catsup, then you have too much salsa and sriracha.
Right. Sriracha.
Sriracha. You hipster, you.
Yeah, yeah.
Sriracha is really good, actually. And in fact, that, we might as well get to that. There are sriracha ketchups that are pretty popular these days because this article says millennials like their spice more than their parents. But depending on where you are in the world, there are all flavors of ketchups and all ways to use ketchup, depending on where you are.
Yeah, and I just want to say I love how that was put. Can't you see a hipster's parent
yeah.
coming to them and be like, what do you like more, your spice or me?
Yeah.
I like my spice more than my parents.
Well, you know that's not what they meant, right?
I know.
Okay.
But let's take a tour around the world. I know what you were leading up to. I just had to double back to that.
All right. Let's go to jolly old England or maybe Venezuela even.
Okay.
Because apparently they like sweeter ketchup in those two places.
Yeah, and in the Philippines, they like sweet ketchup, but they like sweet ketchup that's made from a banana base rather than a tomato base. But they're not crazy over there, so they dye it red. So it looks like tomato ketchup.
Yeah, and we also should say that in England, they might be more apt to reach for the HP sauce before the ketchup, though.
Right, the brown sauce, right?
Yes, they love that stuff.
Yeah, I think that's their number one condiment over there.
HP sauce?
Uh-huh.
Or do they just call it the brown sauce?
They call it the brown.
The brown?
No, wait, that's heroin.
Big brown? No.
Big brown?
Apparently, Americans, like we said, we eat a lot of ketchup, but we're not the leading consumer because the Finns and the Canadians love the stuff more than we do even.
Yeah, which is pretty shameful, America. Pretty shameful, yeah. Mayonnaise and salsa. So in China, Jamaica, and... I believe Thailand, they like to put ketchup on fried chicken. Got to try that one. What about pizza?
Eastern Europe, apparently.
And Trinidad, India, Japan, and Poland. That's how you know it's good, man. That is a diverse collection of countries that all put ketchup on their pizza.
You know, what's funny is my friend Eddie can say all of these foods, ranch dressing.
Well, yeah. I mean, ranch dressing should be the number one condiment in the world. Chuck, hold on. I have to tell you something. You have to go to Japan one of these days, right?
Okay.
There are... I thought it was just understood. You have a standing invitation to come to Japan every time we go.
Because you are the ambassador.
Right. I've got the sash and everything. But Japan's misspelled. they have pizza over there, and rather than tomato sauce... It's going to knock your socks off. They use that Japanese mayo.
What?
With corn.
Whoa.
Sometimes ham.
So,
or like pancetta or something like that.
All right. So you've got a dough.
Yep.
Then you've got a spread of mayonnaise.
Yeah.
Corn off the cob.
Uh-huh.
And ham.
Yes. And it is mind-blowingly good.
Is there cheese?
I don't remember if there
not
was
cheese
or not.
Japan
I think
all,
I
right?
fainted. No, they're not big on they're not big on cheese or dairy. They don't have that much room for cows, although all the cows they have are like Kobe beef cows. I think that's what they kind of dedicate their cow space to.
Did I ever tell you my story of being at the Chinese restaurant when I was a kid? There was a guy getting takeout, and he went through about probably about five or six different things asking if it had cheese on it. Like egg rolls have cheese on it. Mugu Gai Pan, does it have cheese on it?
Right.
And the sweet Chinese owner, is kind of an older guy, kept saying like, no, 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 no. And at the very, after like the fifth thing, the guy stopped him and said, in his very sweet Chinese American accent, that no Chinese food has cheese on it.
Really? Was the guy just messing with him or something?
No, man. I think, I don't know. I guess he was just unfamiliar. I mean, this was the 1970s.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So, maybe he, you know, didn't have experience with Chinese food. But it's funny. As an adult to think about, like, any Chinese food
cheese?
With cheese on, like, melted on top.
Yeah, that's got white American.
So, Sweden, if you go to Sweden, they will actually squeeze ketchup over their pasta.
That's like Honey Boo Boo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they used to put, and I never really watched this show, but, I mean, I was a conscious human being back then, so I was aware of this, but they would cook pasta and then put butter on it and then squeeze ketchup on it, and that was like Honey Boo Boo spaghetti.
Oh my god. No comment.
We used to be colleagues of Honey Boo Boo's at one point.
Did they work for Discovery?
Yeah, they were all on TLC.
I'll have to remember to add that back to my resume.
Right.
Where else? What else we got? What kind of crazy ketchups do we have?
Okay, so, all right, you ready for this one?
Yeah.
This is, I've never heard of this before. In Canada, have you ever had, well, you wouldn't have, but have you ever seen ketchup potato chips?
Yes.
They're pretty good. They're better than barbecue chips, if you ask me. Harris makes a good one, right?
Uh-huh.
Apparently, the Canadians do some wacky thing with it where they take ketchup potato chips and turn it into a ketchup cake of some sort.
Ooh.
I've not had this before, but we're going to be in Toronto and Vancouver this year, so I expect multiple ketchup cakes.
Yeah.
But not really. What? You don't really have to make a ketchup cake.
I should point out, too, since we're talking about that tour, that Toronto and Vancouver are far and away leading in ticket sales right now out of the gate.
Ooh, yeah.
So Canada, like America, needs to step it up because Canada is kicking your butts.
Man, that's the great thing about doing multinational tours is you can pit one country against the other.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Especially as everybody's kind of devolving into nationalism right now, you can really get it going.
You know what kind of chips I did have the other day was the what do you call it? The country gravy, sausage and country gravy.
Oh, the Lay's?
Yeah.
I haven't tried those. Are they good?
Yeah. I mean, do you like white gravy, sausage gravy?
Sure.
It tastes like that.
Really? They nailed it, huh?
They nailed it.
Because sometimes those things are way off.
Well, yeah, they have a contest now, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they do. I'm trying to remember some of the other ones because they've had some good ones, but, chicken and waffles.
Oh,
right. Chicken and waffles one was really good.
Was it?
Yeah. It had like just this hint of maple and, but yeah, it kind of tasted a little fried chicken-y. It was good.
Crazy. What other kinds of crazy ketchups do we have?
What about ketchup ice cream?
No, thank you.
So Baskin-Robbins apparently came up with it, and it died in the lab.
Yeah, I bet.
But apparently it was based on a Heinz ice cream recipe for Heinz Carnival Cream.
Whoa.
So that was a thing. Which, I mean, again, I would try this stuff. Did I ever tell you about the time Yumi and I went to Plaza Fiesta and tried tuna gelato?
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, it tasted just like raw tuna.
Yeah.
It was insane.
Yeah.
Never heard of it before, never seen it anywhere else. It was like this one specific place had it.
Man.
If you ever find yourself in Atlanta, Georgia with some time to kill, go to Plaza Fiesta. Try to find the gelato place and see if they have the tuna gelato.
They have a good cowboy store over there too.
Yeah, they have a bunch of them.
Like good boots, hats, and
shirts,
belts, and checkered shirts. And
brother, if you're throwing a quinceañera, that's where you go.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So lastly, Chuck, we have to give a shout out. We would be really remiss if we didn't mention that one of ketchup is a big ingredient in something called Pruno.
Yeah, we talked about prison wine in our prisons episode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I remembered that was, in fact, maybe I didn't know. Did we say that it was an ingredient?
I don't think so. I didn't notice it until now.
Ooh.
But it's like part of it's like you use that and sugar packets to feed the fermentation process.
In a sock, right?
Can
you make it in a sock?
I don't know if you could make it in a sock. I think it needs to be a little more airtight than that. But maybe not. Maybe you could. Although it all just drip out. I'm not sure, man.
Oh, man.
For the recipe I came across, it's like in a big gallon-sized Ziploc bag. But yeah, after like day two or three of fermentation, you feed it with ketchup packets and sugar.
Gross.
Yeah, and then you got some Pruno, which you should never try.
No.
You got anything else?
Yeah, we should cover this last thing you sent. Headline, Israel ketchup war forces Heinz to relabel sauce as tomato seasoning. So in Israel, the leading ketchup maker is Osem. And they have a 66% market share. And in Israel, as in most countries, they have food standards where you can only call something something if it has this much of whatever.
Yeah, and apparently Israel's standards are much higher than the U.S. or Europe's.
Yeah, so you have to have a certain percentage of tomato concentrate to be labeled tomato ketchup in Israel. And so Osem, even though they have 66% market share, went after Heinz. They said, hey, we did a study with an independent lab that had no skin in the game, leading European external laboratory.
Right.
And they found out that Heinz did not have the required percentage of tomato concentrate.
Right.
So they can't even call it ketchup anymore. And I believe it's being enforced over there, right?
Yeah, well, this was from 2015, and the thing leaves off. I didn't see any updates, but the article leaves off that Heinz was petitioning with the health ministry to change the tomato concentrate requirements down to something like 6%.
Well, here's the thing is Heinz said their claims have no substance. Well, then why are they lobbying to get the percentage lowered?
Right.
You know?
I think what happened was Heinz was selling the same ketchup that they sell in Europe and America. And this is just speculation on my part, but they were probably selling the same ketchup that they sell elsewhere, but in Israel. But Israel has higher food standards, at least as far as their ketchup goes.
Right.
And their competitor nailed them on it. That's what I think happened. But
okay.
Yeah, they can't, on the label, they can call it ketchup in English, but they can't call it ketchup in Hebrew.
Yeah,
they can only call
tomato
it
tomato seasoning?
Yeah. Malk.
Oh, it's pretty funny.
It is. It's a funny world, Chuck.
It is.
And now ketchup is done. I guess I didn't think it would take us in our 900-something episode to finally get to ketchup, but we did.
Well, and this now frees up. Now I have permission to request mayonnaise.
Okay. That's a deal.
We'll do that.
All right.
Maybe we should just have condiment month.
Okay. I like the sound of that. Well, in the meantime, if you want to learn more about ketchup, you can type that word in the search bar at howstuffworks.com. You can also check out Nat Geo's articles on it. Like I said, Fast Co-Design. Mental Floss had a great one. And we got some stuff from our friends at Listverse, who had a pretty interesting compilation of some cool tomato facts or ketchup facts. And since I said tomato instead of ketchup, it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this WoW Signal Update. Did you get tweets about this?
I did, and I ignored them all because I think this is lies.
Oh, all right. Well,
so I think it's propaganda.
Here we go, then.
Aliens.
Hey, guys. First, want to let you know that I love the show. Always look forward to new episodes Tuesday, Thursday, as well as the selects on Saturday. I know you would be interested to find out that I saw a news article the other day that states that an experiment was ran earlier this year based on a paper from 2015 that claimed the WoW signal was caused by hydrogen clouds from comets.
That's not true.
which transited that area of the sky back in 1977. In January of this year, those comets transited once again, and it was determined they were indeed the source of the signal. Of course, this sparked quite a bit of controversy among those hoping that this was a sign of alien life. Mm-hmm. But alas, it appears it wasn't so. I can't help but be a little disappointed. Ever since learning of the WOW signal, I knew it was a long shot. Anyway, keep up the great work. Love to see you in Charleston, South Carolina someday. I'm sure you'd love that city. And Sean Flanagan, I do love Charleston.
Yeah, Charleston is a top-notch town.
Yeah, I don't know if that's has enough people for us to go, but maybe.
I don't know. People might come from around the southeast to that show. Who knows?
But heck, we went to Birmingham. Let's go to Charleston.
Yeah, us playing there is a good enough reason to get people to go to Charleston.
Maybe Bill Murray would come.
Oh, yeah. Is he still there? I know his family is.
Yeah, he lives there.
Okay.
I mean, I think he's got more than one place, but I think he...
Well, I'll tell you what.
Lives
Bill
there
Murray,
sure.
If you're listening, we'll list you for our show if you'll come.
He's just crazy enough to show up.
Yeah.
So that's from Sean, and we had a lot of people write in about the WOW signal. So
yeah, it's disappointing that everybody bought into it. Like, oh, no, it's not aliens. It's this.
Yeah.
Hydrogen cloud.
Stupid comets.
Well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet to us. We're at SYSK Podcast. You can send us all an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.
Today's episode is brought to you by Altoids because, let's face it, unraveling the mysteries of the universe is tough work. But with Altoids, your breath will be stronger than a black hole's gravitational pull, more intense than an alien abduction, and more reliable than your phone's battery during a podcast marathon. When it comes to needing intense freshness, Altoids have you covered. Altoids are stronger than your favorite conspiracy theory, more intense than the latest true crime docuseries, and more reliable than a Bigfoot sighting. They're not just mints, they're curiously strong mints. Find Altoids in the checkout aisle. Grab your tin today.